I'm Farrell.
Hey, I'm Ness.
And I'm Kyle.
And this is our personal therapy.
Well, here we are, episode number 2, Kubler-Ross Model for Grief, Stage 2, Anger.
Grr, anger, mad.
Hulk smash.
Hulk smash.
Silence, because that's how I deal with anger.
Wow.
What?
Well,
I mean, there's anger, which is a base human emotion, and I mean, as we understand it, in light of the Kubler-Ross model, it's a transition stage, if you will. It's the first step out of the fake reality, which is the denial stage, where you don't want your new reality to be true, so you just deny it. You just shut down and deny it. And this is the beginning of the healing process, if you will, towards what is the true reality, which is acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like at this point, the event has become a reality to you, but you're not yet at the point where you're okay with that, where you've accepted it. You're still fighting it, but it's not, you're not avoiding it anymore.
But you're not ready to process it.
Yeah.
Well, you're starting the process.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the way we looked at that was the denial and acceptance are kind of like the goalposts. They're the opposite ends of the grief process spectrum. I don't know if it's actually a spectrum. It's a process, but like they kind of represent, to me anyways, my understanding of it, the fake reality and the true reality, the new reality that you're going to experience after whatever is causing grief.
Right, kind of like WandaVision, like the whole how it starts out in this fake 50s world that she's created for herself, that's in that, you know, state of denial.
Yeah, no spoilers, but I mean, it's like she's in denial at that point.
You didn't watch it at this point. I mean, like,
I mean, not everyone has a Disney Plus membership.
I guess not. That's true.
Some people are waiting for their friends to get them.
Yeah, come on, Ness. Where's my Disney Plus?
Sorry, I'm working on it. I swear.
Oh my god, Ness, just working out problems on air.
Yeah, sorry. Jeez. This is too vulnerable.
Yeah.
too much vulnerability. I'm out.
It's too much. I'm out.
But yeah, it's important to begin that process. And it's not easy. Like when we talk about it in terms of like stage one and stage two, it's kind of easy to look at things very sanitized, very clinically, I guess. Or come across that way. But there are layers and layers that go into this. It's like, I think we said it last episode, where like grief doesn't happen in a vacuum, and you're going to feel so much. Mm-hmm. And you're still going to have to go through life. So yeah. What you have to do to keep on living with this new reality.
Yeah, it's going to look different for everyone. I mean,
yeah, totally.
Everybody is their own individual person. So they have their own individual set of whatever is going on in their life, whatever stage they are at their life versus somebody else. Yeah, it's going to look totally different for everybody. Now, maybe not totally, but it can look different. It varies. It's
unique.
Yeah, it's split up into five different stages, sure, that you might all go through, but these aren't going to look the same. But there's going to be certain vague, broad things that are found among everyone.
Yeah, I think we were talking about how it's moving from the first gate. That was the analogy that I think we explained last week. Moving from the first gate to the second, it's almost cognitive to emotional. Like, being in denial is a cognitive thing. It's an intellectual thing. Your brain is denying something, but then anger is a felt emotion. And kind of that's the process in the Kubler-Ross model is sort of intellectual to emotional to intellectual to emotional, but then acceptance is kind of where they come together, mm-hmm. or at least that's how I see it. I think it's how we see it.
Right. Well, everything is now at that point balanced. You know, your feelings, your emotions, everything are in line with perhaps what is objectively true. Mm-hmm. You aren't thinking it's not. You're not trying to logic your way out of this situation. You're not feeling any sort of attachment to a previous past or anything. Yeah, they combine and it's balanced, but that takes a lot of work to get to the last stage.
Mm-hmm.
Final stage.
Final stage.
But yeah, it you guys, again, I have the least experience with this, but you guys have both described it as being, it's like a filter over your life that kind of colors everything, right? Like it's not just, okay, completed the five stages of grief, time to move on with life. Like it in the moment when processing it is going to be a filter for your life, but also moving forward, it's now kind of a new lens that you are going to see the world through,
right? Yeah, like everything just makes you mad because that's what everything is, right? Everything is over that shade of, if it was like red, everything just is red. This person doing this thing, they're doing it in a way that would make you angry, a way that...
Yeah.
Right. In that filtered way, in that they're doing it in a red way, if you put it like that. That red symbolizes anger.
Yeah.
Do you mean like that you're kind of perceiving actions as angry towards you?
Yeah.
They can, but not necessarily. It's just on a dimension of anger.
Okay.
Right. Maybe that you should react with anger, that it would be valid to react with anger, or that people might be angry with you. You could be projecting your own anger onto another person. That's possible.
I'm not angry, you're angry.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that filter everything. Like you might do someone might just laugh or make a sound the wrong way, or
don't laugh, I'm angry.
Come on. Yeah, cuz they're supposed to know that. Like,
yeah.
Right? Exactly. Like and I think that is something that I think can make someone angry, can add to that anger is just that sense of not feeling like you're seen.
Yeah.
Right? That if you are actually not, or that people don't care, rather. Yeah, the thing is that people don't, it can feel like people do not care because this is happening to me, but everyone's acting like it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But
so, like, you're talking about in like when you internalize the anger, when you're not, you know, Hulk smashing everything in sight, you're internalizing it, and then you're feeling like people aren't even seeing you as a person because of how you're feeling.
No, not necessarily. I think.
Wow, I'm just missing everything.
Apparently.
Well, I think, like, for me, this stage of anger is something that I relate to the most.
Yes.
And when I went through my trauma and, like, with my mom passing away, like, anger felt like the one that I stayed in the longest now, like, looking back. But, like I said last week, my family was like, wow, she's doing really well. She's really happy. She's, like, living life. But to me, that filter was on everything. But this is where my Enneagram 9 comes in. I was suppressing the heck out of it and just like not letting anyone see it. And just even I felt like a lot of my family moved on really quickly. So I was like, okay, I guess we're doing that. So I just like internalized the anger and just like, okay, I guess we're doing good now and we're moving on.
Right.
So then the anger would stay in, but it has to come out eventually. So it would come out in people that were closest to me. Sometimes because they didn't ask the right question, even if they were checking in with me, they didn't ask the right question. So I'd be like, they don't care. Like they didn't ask how I was doing. They just said, hey, what's up? Like,
yeah.
And I find that even now that anger is something that I really have to deal with when I feel that filter coming over my life again, I have to be like, nope, don't let that. But you have to be very careful with the balance of suppressing it and like not letting it
Right, because you can get just so nitpicky, right? Yeah. Like, you feel that anger, and then it's like, oh my gosh, why are they doing this like this? Yeah. And it's like, but there's nothing wrong with the way that they're doing it.
Yeah,
like, there's nothing
exactly.
wrong with what they didn't do anything wrong to you. Like, their actions are not wrong. Yeah. They might have just, it was just annoying because you were in this irritable state.
Yeah, exactly.
I could imagine, just again, not being somebody that was there, I feel like it would be very easy to fall into the trap of, this happened to me, I'm a victim in this, and therefore I'm justified in how I feel angry, and just like, you could almost use it as a crutch or an excuse for the rest of your life. It's like, well, I didn't have a mom, I didn't have a dad. Like,
absolutely. And you can feel justified in that because you might feel invisible. You might feel, again, like when somebody breaks a bone, they are given attention. When they go through this physical trauma, they're actually given attention.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And when you go through this internal pain, trauma, well, nobody's necessarily noticing you.
Right, like, they may bring you baked goods for the first week.
Right, but they not. But then that's only if they even have heard about it.
Right,
right. It's
right.
Like,
so yeah. I'm talking more so, like, when it happens, but then, like, after that, like, who just knows
exactly
that you're going through
right.
that, right?
And it can feel as if these people, like, just feel not, obviously not consciously thinking, wow, this person, but it feels like they are not taking into account the way that you are feeling at that point, that sadness, that grief that you are feeling. And because of that, you get angry because they're just ignoring it. But they're not ignoring because they can't see it. Right.
Yeah.
In the same way as if someone just like, oh, why is that guy walking so slowly and he's on crutches? It's like, who's doing that? Or like, right? Like, they broke their leg. Obviously, they're going to be moving slowly.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I expect all people with crutches to just motor.
Well, of course. Why would you not? Yeah. Everyone's fast all the time constantly. Come on.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that just seems like a them problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just kidding for the record.
He's
I'm not that
just
callous.
Just joking.
Just jokes.
Just man. Jokes.
Oh yeah, don't you know? Just jokes there, bud. Farrell, I think you said earlier, in our private discussions leading up to the podcast.
Private,
I'm uncomfortable with the atmosphere we've created in the studio today.
How you starting to accept this new reality,
yes.
Beginning that process, moving out of denial, makes you very defensive and feels almost like an existential threat. Could you perhaps, you know...
Right, but when we're dealing with this reality shifting event, right, it literally is a threat to this existence. If you hold dear the past without whatever may have happened, right, this trauma, let's say my dad died, right, if I'm holding on to the reality before that was the case, then that comes in and is this threat to my existence, right, of just existence itself, of it's come to attack my the reality, basically,
right.
It feels like your life, maybe it might feel like your life has been destroyed, and
earth shattering,
exactly.
Earth altering,
exactly. And what you, because you had said that you think that at this point of anger is when people may start to question things.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of a little bit of why is when something of this existential nature happens. Well, now you're in that existential mode.
Yeah.
Right. You're questioning all these things.
How can I continue to exist? Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of the anger is based on what you've lost. So, like, you've lost the future that you had before the event happened. You lost, like, because it colors everything in your life from then on. So you're like, well, I guess my future won't be like that anymore because this happened. And, like, that's kind of what you're angry at a lot of the time.
Exactly. It's this abstract thing that you're angry at. You're not actually angry at anybody, you know. Who took my dad? I can't blame somebody for that. It's just maybe nature took him, maybe God took him, maybe something, but it's no person who I could just blame. But that anger then goes somewhere, right? And it might get put onto a person, even though.
Right. Like, I mean, somebody could be at blame. Which is why I think in movies and TV shows you see that so often.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just the character has someone to blame and therefore has direction, and I think that resonates with us because it's not abstract, but when it is abstract, I can't imagine what it's like to process that because it's like you can't just point a finger and say, well, you ran my dad over with your car, so now it's your fault, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just... his heart failed.
Yeah.
Okay, what do I do with that?
His damn heart, if he was still alive, I'd kill it.
Right.
Really? Doesn't make sense.
No, you can't. There's nothing you can do. And then that can also create so much tension. Just want to do something, but there's nothing you can do necessarily. Sometimes there is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's all. Like, why I also said it was questioning is because when you're in the state of denial, you're not in a place where you're going to question, because it's not true to you. You're denying that it happened, so therefore you have no reason to question.
Yeah.
So part of the anger would come in, or with anger would come in questioning, because that's the first step towards acceptance.
Right. There's now something to direct questions to.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
This is the new thing.
There's a reason to question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the new thing. What are the new rules? How does this work?
Parameters.
Now? Exactly. How does my life now operate based on this? Because this is the case now, and I hate it, and I don't like it.
I guess we're here.
Yeah, but it's here, and I can't ignore it any longer. And... yeah, so you just ask yourself why me?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why did this happen to me? Like, anyone, it could have happened to anybody. Yeah. Why did it happen to me? Why? Yeah,
I imagine it would be confusing as hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially, I know for myself, in that sudden state, it's like, okay, well, now anything can happen. Like, what? Like, that was not supposed to happen just randomly. Oh, today my dad's just dead now. Like, that was supposed to happen, and it did. So what else just can happen?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that was the thing that I went through, because after my mom passed away, I was one of my biggest fears was that, my dad dying too.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like, well, like, if my mom passed away, I guess, like, I can lose my dad, too.
Totally,
so, like,
totally possible, yeah.
I, like, tried to, like, spend more time with him. And, like, I clung to him after my mom passed away, because I was like, literally anyone could die at any time. Like,
right. Yeah, but it opens that door, because that's always been true.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
But I'd never experienced it, so no. I didn't know.
Exactly. Yeah. Now you have, it's like... well, what else? Who else? What's going to happen next? Totally.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing of, like, a story from high school. My best friend was going through, like, her grandpa was sick, and she wasn't hanging out with me and my other friend very much because she was spending as much time as she could with her grandpa. And I understood that, because I was like, of course, like,
yeah,
he could be gone tomorrow.
Yeah,
like,
totally,
yeah.
Totally.
And our other friend... we were planning something, and she was like, oh, I don't think she can come because she's spending time with her grandma. Like, grandpa, she kind of uses that as an excuse to not hang out with us. And I got so mad.
Yeah.
I was like, excuse me?
Right,
because
those,
like,
people don't understand
that
they
it
could
just
be taken away.
Yeah, it, like, blew my mind that she did not see that.
Yeah.
And I was like, excuse me? That is not an excuse. Like,
right.
And I, like, went on this long rant and, like, left the cafeteria. It
Absolutely.
Was, like, my most dramatic moment in high school.
Totally.
But, yeah, that just... yeah, it's just a whole new perspective that you see that was, yeah, true always... but you only actually see it because you experienced it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's in some way it's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I think. But if you really, I think, work through these things, right? Because you don't won't necessarily just become more sensitive to somebody else's pain.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
You could just be focused on your own pain.
Well, yeah, you could just
right?
sit in yours.
Yeah. And you could have just been like, "Hey, my mom died.
Yeah,
why aren't you spending
Why would
time
you say that
me?
To me? Like,
yeah, I need people right now. Yeah, spend time with me, not your
who needs her. Like,
yeah.
Well, I mean, them. Beforehand, you had mentioned a broken bone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like an injury, like somebody's on crutches. It's obvious people give that attention because it's out there, it's open,
mm-hmm.
it's seen.
Mm-hmm.
The emotions aren't always seen, but I mean, I think a broken bone is actually a really good analogy for grief because, like, if you've ever broken a bone, usually the first instinct is to go, "This didn't just happen."
Yeah.
Like, you don't feel the pain at first, but then you. Like, even before you feel the pain, you're kind of in that, did this really just happen? Like, I'm looking at a broken foot or a broken, like, leg.
Yeah, yeah.
Did it just happen? I don't think it just happened. And then, like, you have that adrenaline going through your body. So now you have that anger, and it needs to be directed somewhere. For me, when I injure myself, it's usually at myself. Like, even if somebody else caused me to get injured, I'm usually angry that I let myself get injured more than like getting angry at the person. But like, yeah. And then you usually I think you go through all the stages with an injury even.
Right. Well, this is now a new painful thing you have. It's a trauma.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a new painful thing you're going to have to deal with. Okay. Well, now how do I deal with my life with my foot broken?
Yeah.
Right. You don't think about that every day. You could just lose it. Or, like, right, you could just lose your hand. You could just anything. You could break your anything today.
Which then is like, oh, man, the amount of times I've gotten, like, sick and I've, like, had the flu or something. And it's like, man, I remember the days when I had a clean nasal passage and I could breathe properly. How could I take that for granted?
I totally, yes.
And then, like, and then moving forward in life, you know, every now and then your nose will get slightly plugged and you'll be like, oh no, I hope I'm not getting sick. Man, I've really been taking my nose for granted lately.
Yeah.
But it's just things you don't think about.
Yes.
So, like, if you don't experience being sick, you have no sympathy for somebody who is.
Absolutely.
Like, I've seen that so much. Or, like, where people can handle sickness better and therefore it's made them calloused to people who are
sick.
Yeah,
suck it up.
Like, I mean, I work in landscaping, so like I work with the construction guys, and it's like, you don't call in work sick, you work through it, like you just keep on working. And it's like, okay, but if you do that, you actually spread the contagion more.
Mm-hmm.
You are making your sickness last longer because you're pushing through it. So really, it's a dumb mentality to have, because you're just gonna be there longer. And it's the same thing with trauma. Like, it is what it is. Like, you need to go through it in a healthy way. You need to let yourself heal. You need to let yourself feel those things and take the steps to heal yourself. But oftentimes, I don't think those tools are always readily available or talked about as much.
Totally. And I mean,
in our day and age, more so.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, like, what do you do when this just happens to you? Right? Like, who? I don't know that anybody fully really even knows at all what to do at that point. I mean, for sure, in your specific circumstance.
Yeah.
Right? Like.
Because even if you talk to someone who has lost a parent, they might be the opposite gender, or the parent that they lost might be the opposite gender of, like, who you lost, or, like, it might have happened differently.
Yeah.
So, like, you can try to get other people's perspective, but it's never going to be the same situation that you went through.
No, you can get some vague,
broad
advice.
This worked for me.
Yeah. Here's what happens when you lose. Because there's things that are consistent along, like losing a parent. Like, that's just consistent.
The umbrella of it.
Right. But, totally. But then there's all these different things.
Yeah.
All the relationship's different.
Exactly.
All
who you are, who they were.
Yeah. Even if someone is super similar to you, but they lose somebody else, well, then it's totally different too. I mean, who's got your exact circumstances? Nobody.
Yeah.
Exactly.
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 You, again, back to our previous conversations that we've had leading up to the podcast. Mm-hmm. Like, we put lots of thought and discussion into these podcasts. It's not just flipping on the mic. It's, you know, us talking these things through beforehand. So
taking notes.
I mean, yeah. some of the stuff is improv'd, and you know, it's
a little bit.
But for the most part, like, we have notes that we follow, and part of those notes are just from the discussion of what we have discussed.
What? Great.
That's so profound, Kyle. Oh, my gosh. I need a coffee.
So smart.
but, wow. Farrell, you talked about native emotions being like a parasite. Can you please elaborate on that?
Right. Well, I feel like specifically negative emotions can really just take control of you. They can take, yeah, negative emotions can take control of you, and they want to spread, just as, you know, like misery loves company, this idea that we've heard. In that same way, you know, anger loves company, right? This thing wants to then spread out to other people. And now create this environment in which it can continue to breed. And also, I have the example for Man of Steel, the Kryptonians, right, they come to Earth, they invade. They're foreign, they're not from that place. They're this outside entity, just like anger. But that then, they terraform the Earth.
Well, they try to.
They try to. Totally. They're unsuccessful. They fail. But they're attempting to terraform the Earth. They're attempting to make it their own environment, which they can then be comfortable in. In that same way, I think anger will do the same thing to a person and to those around them, or can.
Mm. Well, yeah. And if it changes the environment, that's just... What's happening is you're not actually processing the anger, you're just spreading it, which then you're creating an environment of anger or a lower vibrational frequency, which is going to do a couple things. It's going to push people away that aren't trying to live there, and it's going to attract people who are trying to live there.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah. You know, misery likes company, that's great, but it never actually says anything about helping you grow out of that,
right,
or move through that.
Or who... also likes misery, right?
Yeah,
misery, like, loves company, but most company doesn't like misery.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Right? Like, it's a push and pull.
Totally,
right?
But
like,
there is company that does like misery, and that's misery.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right? So you just continuously just put yourself into a what would it be? Like a...
Well, a vicious cycle, really, because you're going to then feed off of each other.
I was going to say, almost like an echo chamber.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You put yourself into this mode of other people who are in the same lower frequency as you, the same angry state, and, you know, never really wanting to get out, just being comfortable in there because, well, it can be hard to get out of that anger, to...
Well, in so many movies, I always relate it to movies and TV shows, but like in so many media forums, you just see people that are constantly being dragged back into like the bad crew or like the bad kids. And it's like they're trying to break free and they're trying to get out of that. But it's like the people that are there and are content in their misery are going to love that environment and feed into that environment and attract anyone that they can into that environment. And anyone who tries to leave is a threat to them because it's taking away from what they want and where they're at. So that's where I was trying to say, like, it could be hard to get out of anger or depression when you're trying to process this if you only surround yourself with people that are like that, because it's easy to push those people away that aren't where you're at and attract people that are. But then when you do try to grow out of that, they're going to try and pull you down. They're trying to pull you back in because you're threatening their new existence.
Totally. And it feels good and it feels safe because it's like nobody else understands me. Right. But these people do.
Yeah.
These people in this lower frequency state do understand me. These angry people understand me. These happy people. Happiness, someone being happy can actually make you more angry.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right?
I've like, been there.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Right? Like, and then, right, so these people who are more are similar to you in the same state as you, it's a lot easier to be around them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more comfortable. It's your comfort zone.
You also even might, with trauma, you might also feel guilty if you go to that joyful place.
Right.
Like, for me, it definitely happened where I would be, like, singing along at a concert or hanging out with friends, and I'd, like, be laughing and having fun, and then this, like, voice would come in my head and be like, what are you doing? Yeah. Do you not remember what happened? Like, how are you laughing
totally,
right now?
Yeah.
How are you living a good life right now?
Right,
then,
right.
Like, that's what would, like, drag me back to, like, the down part.
Absolutely. You should be mourning. You're wrong for these feelings.
This is a lifelong mourning.
Exactly. Like, come on, Ness. Your mom died.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
How dare you be happy, like, 10 years later.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. How dare you?
I think a really good analogy, and I love analogies because it's just, it's
They're
a great
good.
Way of explaining things, in my opinion, anyways, because it says, hey, here's this thing that you understand. Let me use that to explain a thing that you may not understand in the words I've been using.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
But I think that, like, going through grief is a lot like somebody falling into a river. Like, they're falling and they're potentially denying, like, oh, I didn't fall into a river. I'm good, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, they hit the water and all of a sudden it's, nope, they fell into a river. It's, they're no longer denying it, but they're probably angry either at themselves or the people they were with. Like, no, why did nobody stop this from happening?
Yeah.
How come nobody's told me not to lean on the railing? How come, like, whatever, insert whatever caused it, right? It's easy to fall into that anger aspect of things.
Yeah.
And it's like, in reality, what they need to do is get through that and get to the point in order to survive.
Mm-hmm.
They need to get out of the river. Like, they need to get to the bank of the river. They need to crawl out. They need to make a fire, warm themselves, dry off. Otherwise, they're going to freeze to death and die.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's super easy to isolate yourself in that.
Mm-hmm.
To say, I'm the one who fell in the river.
Yeah.
And nobody's helping me. Or if people are helping me, why aren't they doing more?
Yeah.
Or, you know, oh, I fell into the river further away from the bank than someone else did.
Yeah.
Or where I fell in, the current was stronger. And it's like, you can make all these excuses, but at the end of the day, if you don't get out of the river and make a fire, you're gonna die.
Yeah, totally.
Like,
maybe
probably not even from drowning at that point. Like,
no.
So, like, from, like I said, from a clinical perspective, from a very, like, sanitized perspective of somebody not going through it or having really gone through a whole lot of grief in their life, it's easy for me to sit here and be like, this is what you need to do.
Right.
But
and
I do understand that it's complex and it doesn't happen in a vacuum.
No, because it's an incredibly difficult thing to do, right? It's not saying, just get over it, just deal with it, just do it. And right, like, unfortunately, yes. I mean, I do think that, yes, though, like, it does have to be done. But it's understanding, I think, that you do have the power to get over it.
Yes.
Right. It is inside of you to get over this, to or to accept it, or to just not allow yourself to stay down there. It is, I think, a lot better. Like, people say, you know, it gets better. But, you know, but, like, I think that it does, but not naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't think that it just will be better.
Yeah, like, you have to take steps.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody's float bobbing up and down in the river going, well, this is life now. And like,
It can get better, though.
Yeah.
If you put in the work, but it's... And it's not to say that that's easy at all. And it's not to say that any of us don't have work to put in still.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I've looking back, I realized that I have learned a lot about, like, dealing with anger. In, like, one example, when it happened and, like, a few years after, I would just, like, let the anger control me and just, like, do whatever and then, like, move on and whatever. But now I find that when I'm in those, like, angry states, I'll have, like, a moment of clarity where I'm like, man, you've been a real bitch today. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Maybe don't yell at people anymore.
Right.
Like, those closest to me are the ones that I let my anger out on. So I, like, my dad is one example. Like, there'd be a moment where I'd be like, okay, maybe let's be a little bit nicer. You've been kind of mean all day.
Yeah.
And then, like, the next thing he says, I'm like, like, it's like I just forgot, like, what I was just thinking.
For sure.
And, like, but that's growth to me, because I think before I didn't even have that clarity at all.
Yeah,
I just let it consume me.
Yeah,
and now at least I'm trying.
Yes. Right.
Like, there's a Taylor Swift quote that says,
of course,
and my words shoot to kill when I'm mad. I have a lot of regrets about that. And that song hits me every time, because
every
it's
time.
So true.
So
true. I have said so many things to, like, people closest to me that I'm like, oh, you idiot. Like, after the fact.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, well, you just could have ruined that whole relationship. Because you've just like
totally, and I think that Matthew, we talked about the difference that introverts and extroverts,
mm-hmm.
how they may see it. Extroverts are likely to kind of just do it everywhere, just like, ah, I'm angry.
Yeah. It's like dispersed more evenly.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas introverts,
yeah, random outbursts,
but
yeah,
everywhere.
Introverts are like holding it until it explodes.
Yes, exactly. And instead, I think oftentimes for myself, being a more introverted person, instead of even expressing my anger, sometimes I just leave.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, these people annoyed me, so I'm gone. Goodbye. Like, don't even tell them goodbye. Just, I'm out. Ghost.
Wait, is
well
that why you always just, like, walk away? Like, we're hanging out and you just walk away?
Yeah. Well, yeah,
it's
like,
bye.
I don't talk to you for years. And then I hate
that,
you,
that
Kyle.
That was definitely
surprise,
a thing that happened.
You.
But it's good to find out while we're recording.
What?
Well, that's
jokes,
the thing. That's the thing with, like, your close friends. They're going to get your genuine good emotions and your genuine bad ones.
Totally.
Because, like, when you get to know someone, you'll find out crazy, like, man, they're really awesome at this. And, like, they, like, care about people so much. But, like, they can be mean sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and, like, only a few people might know those, like, genuine emotions. Because, well, introverts, I feel like maybe more.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah. Well, those
are closest to.
I'm kind of an extreme example. Sorry, Farrell, to cut you off.
No,
but, like, as an extrovert, like, I'm an open book, which isn't necessarily extroverted, but it definitely, they feed into each other, where it's just like, oh, hi, I just met you. Here's my life story. Like, I'm okay with that. Like, that's the kind of person that I am.
Yeah.
So then it really makes people uncomfortable when they're not like that, because they don't like, they think like they think, and they're like, why is this person sharing this, and what are they actually hiding?
Yeah.
When in reality, I'm just like a puppy who's like, hi, this is me. Love me. I love you. Do you love me back? Like, that's, you know, so like it's healthy for me to have friendships with people that aren't like me to help me grow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I find the same thing for myself. Like, I don't know that I naturally would have just done a podcast. Like, what?
Yep, and then you met me.
Yeah. And
me too. I feel like I would have always wanted to, but I wouldn't have done it by myself.
Right. Totally.
What? Other people want to do it? Sure.
I know. What, crazy?
But yeah, like, it's important, like, with emotions, because they're tricky territory, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a progression there if you let yourself progress. If you don't just surround yourself with like-minded people, I think I used the term earlier of, like, vibrational frequencies, but, like, you know, those people that are just, like, they sap all your energy because it's all negative all the time.
Yeah.
And, like, those people need love, yes, but maybe not if you're going through something.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Knowing, because that's only going to be worse. Knowing what you can do, because you want to help them. Oftentimes, we just want to help people. But you have to know, it's like a lifeguard, right? Like, what I don't know, you know, like, what is it? Like, the rule of lifeguard, a rule of lifeguard. Is
don't know, never,
okay,
never learned how
and
to do
I can't
that.
Swim, but,
yeah.
but apparently I know lifeguard stuff.
Even less applicable.
Yeah, right to me,
or I guess more.
Yeah, I need a lifeguard, please. But is to, if someone's bringing you down, right, if someone's like actually taking you down, well, you might be in danger if you're out in deep water. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. And no, so no. I've definitely heard that where it's like sometimes they like just let the person like become unconscious because they're not going to drown and like die the second that they stop moving.
Totally.
You actually like back off until they've stopped flailing.
Yeah.
And then,
So sometimes it can feel like, you know, well, I've been through this trauma and I know where they're at and I've been in a bit of a similar place.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to swim. I learned how to swim. Now I'm lifeguarding.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's like, okay, well, this is my responsibility maybe to do. Like, I have to do this. Who else could help them out? But maybe you can't. You know, maybe you do have to in some way ensure your own safety, your own emotional security.
Well, if that lifeguard has a hurt leg or something, maybe they shouldn't be helping other people.
Yeah,
because I feel like that's an actual story there. But
oh, no.
No, just feeding into the analogy? Oh, it sounded like a story.
No. Well, I do have an analogy, though. Oh, although, I have a story.
I was going to say that it's interesting that Pharaoh went the lifeguard route because, like, the next point was his, like, ball analogy.
The beach ball.
All right. The beach ball. So,
emotions are like a ball in a pool.
Do you want me to tell my story?
Yes.
Oh, okay. We could do that. That's fine.
Yeah, let's do
It just fits into the lifeguard analogy. Like when I was younger, me and my cousin were swimming at a pool and I was old enough to go into the deep end, but she wasn't. I wasn't across the rope, like into the actual deep end, but I was like kind of on the verge, but I was holding onto the wall because I didn't know how to like confidently swim yet. And she wanted to join me so bad that she, like, jumped onto me. Both went down because I didn't know how to swim. And she just jumped onto me. Yeah. So the lifeguard had to, like, come get us. But I was like, I can't hold you up if I'm also struggling.
Totally, yeah. And sometimes you might not even realize that you are struggling.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I was, like, holding on the wall, getting my confidence.
Yeah, no,
like,
I can do this. It's fine.
I got this. Yeah. And then she just launched at me.
Yeah, like, oh, maybe I could.
I was like,
all right,
never mind.
That's too much, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Right. So I think... Beach ball analogy. How does that work?
Well, you were saying that, like, the ball in the analogy is, like, your emotion, and that, like, you're trying to hold it underwater.
Right, letting go. Right, I think that's an important thing, is to realize that you can let go of your emotions, of this attachment, at least this attachment to your emotions. Right, I think so often we get in our own way, in our own heads, and we're angry, and so we keep thinking angry thoughts. We keep being, even if we're trying to get over the anger, we're like, I gotta get over this. I gotta fix this. I gotta figure this thing out in my head, and that'll make me less angry. If only I can figure this out. But in fact, that's just feeding the anger. Yeah. Don't be angry, right? It's like that. What is it like? Think, don't think pink elephants, right? Yeah. It's like, well, what are you going to think, right? You're going to think of that. It's
Dumbo.
Right. Rather than just allowing yourself to let go in the same way as if you were to hold a beach ball down underwater, right? Mm-hmm. And then why is it not coming up? Where's my... I don't know. Maybe because you're holding it down. Maybe because you're attached to it.
Guess it's not there anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, right now. It's because you're attached to it at that low state. Right? Mm-hmm. In the depths of that anger or any negative emotion like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you would simply let go or at least stop exerting pressure onto it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Just relax. That's it. Just relax and let go, and with some guidance, allow that ball to come to the surface. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
See, I actually, when you explained it the first time to me, I understood it differently. So that's interesting because, like, the way I saw it was that holding the ball under the water was like pushing your emotions down, like pretending they don't exist. Like, there's no beach ball here.
Yeah.
And that's unhealthy because eventually it's going to come up.
Yeah.
And if you just let go, like, I mean, what kid hasn't done that where they've been like, I'm going to push this as far down as I can. And then it just like launches into the air.
Yeah. Mm. It's might hurt other people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It could hit somebody else, right? Yeah. It's going to do that if you just let it go because, or if you're trying to push it down, that it's eventually going to come up.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be in a controlled way, in a healthy way, or at the ideal time.
Exactly. Like, you can at least guide how it comes up. Totally. How that happens. In that sense, and this is another analogy, I guess.
Analogies on analogies.
Analogyception.
I was literally just going to say that.
Right,
spent too much time.
I was trying to think of a way to combine those two words.
Eventually, that ball is probably going to come up. Like, eventually, it's probably going to just be shaking around the water and everything. And then
you can only hold it down there for so long.
Exactly. And then eventually, it comes up, and you can either be there and guide it up, guide those emotions up, or, you know, guide them where they should go and to channel them into something perhaps creative or productive.
Or make sure that if it's coming up fast, make sure no one's around to get hurt.
Totally.
Lock yourself in a room with a baseball bat and just go to town.
Go to a place. Do we have places where you can just throw plates against the wall?
I know that that's a thing.
I want to do that so badly.
Farrell's volunteering
you
in this apartment.
You could do that anywhere. It's frowned upon, though.
Plates thrown in my apartment.
I would love to do that.
$5 per throw.
I saw that on Pretty Little Liars, and I've wanted to do
it
ever since.
I think
it's
also at Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Is it? Oh, it is.
Yeah. For Rosa's bachelorette party.
Oh, yeah. They destroy the restaurant. Oh, that'd
be
amazing.
But it is important to let emotions run their course without denying them, as in pushing them down or, like, rushing through trying to process them. Because if you rush through the process or try to, like, speed it up, then you're only making problems for yourself in the future. It's the same thing as denying it or pushing it down. It's just, it's going to come out later and it's not going to be when you want it to. And it's going to do more damage than if you just sort of worked on it. Like, it's...
Well, that's like me. That's a really good example of me actually in my life. Because, like I said, when I was younger, like, everyone else was moving on so quickly and dealing with their anger and denial and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, all right, I guess we're over this now. So now as an adult, that anger like rises up again. And I'm like, well, I thought we dealt with this. Where is this coming from?
Yeah.
So I'm actually learning how to deal with it rather than just like mirroring other people or just like pushing it down.
Yeah, yeah. How am I supposed to act? Oh, I guess I'll just act like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anger's supposed to be felt.
I know.
That's so not what I learned.
Well, and especially with anger, because it's like, the active negative emotion, like, we'll cover it more, I guess, in the depression talk, which has such an ominous sound to it. whereas, like, depression is more of the passive negative.
Right. In that way that when you are angry, oftentimes you might want to punch something or you might want to do something to just get things out. Like, right. Yeah. Versus when you're depressed, typically you feels difficult to do anything, right? You become passive. But when you are angry, it feels hard not to do anything, not to shout, not to punch, not to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's sort of back to the broken bone analogy. It's it's when the adrenaline's running through your body versus the crash after the adrenaline's been through your system, sort of when you've fought it out, like you, like in cartoons when somebody's just holding somebody by their head, like away from their body, and the person's just like swinging at them, and eventually they tire themselves out and just kind of collapse, right?
Yeah.
Like it's going from that anger into that more like, well, I'm passive, I'm resigned now, or I've spent my energy. There's nothing more I can do.
Yeah,
and we'll talk about that more when we get there.
Yeah,
that's
totally
just to tie it all together, kind of thing.
Yes. Foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like this is planned or
we
something.
What?
No
everything.
Way.
But like, I think you guys made the point earlier about how it's important that negative and positive emotions need to be felt mm-hmm. and are genuine and valid. And
yes.
that, mm-hmm. I think sometimes in our culture, like yeah. it's easy to say like certain emotions are acceptable, certain emotions
yeah.
aren't, you know, in certain subcultures you see that where it's like, nope, only happy thoughts here. Like only,
yeah.
only the positive ones. Like
yeah.
we don't talk about the bad ones. They don't exist.
Yeah.
Brush them under the rug.
We're not pushing them down. They just don't exist.
Yeah, exactly. All talk right. about denial.
Yeah.
Boy, no, I'm a big, strong person.
Yeah.
Strong. No emotions. Yeah. Oh boy.
But also how mm-hmm. even when processing this, how sometimes it'll come back, right? Like you guys talked about, we talked about it earlier about
yeah.
In the podcast, not in our private
right.
talks. We talked about
yes.
it earlier in the podcast about how despite processing it, it can be a filter in your life.
Totally.
It
and
can come back.
Yes.
That
these
are like gates where you go through, but then come back. Like
mm-hmm.
it's not okay. Done with anger now.
Yep.
Yep. And these new
never
things
dealing with that again.
Can, right, these events that happen, let's say, yeah, like graduating high school, moving out,
mm-hmm.
whatever, these bigger life events, without the parent, can almost be experienced as their own little smaller events, own little smaller, maybe traumatic events.
Well, it makes you feel the trauma again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you guys stop describing my life?
Like, yeah.
I feel really cold out.
I just feel really cold out. Like that, yeah. In the last few years, I was talking to someone who literally described it like that, and like it blew my mind because at the moment, like, yeah, you go through the trauma, but like there's going to be
its drama
with its own drama, and there's going to be stuff in the future that you can't even see at that moment. Like, yes, at the moment, I was like, oh, that's going to be crappy when like the first Christmas,
mm-hmm.
but like when I was 13 when it happened. So when I started high school, I was like, oh, like it happened all over again, the model of grief. And then when I graduated high school, it happened again, like maybe
yeah.
a bigger scale, maybe a like smaller scale,
yeah.
like scale, like waves. And then I did a college program and I like moved out with my aunt and I kind of went through it again there. Cause like I had my aunt, but I didn't have my mom. Like,
mm-hmm.
and then, I moved out of there kind of on my own and like had my first like real job and then I felt it again and just those like different stages that I didn't realize would happen and I would feel that when it happened.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just like waves. Sometimes it can be bigger, sometimes smaller. And I feel like it's random because
yeah.
like now this year was the 11th anniversary and it hit me really hard, but I think it was because just my mental state.
Totally, and I don't know that it is
yeah.
random, right?
Yeah, that's true.
There are,
but it's seemingly random,
because yeah, because you're not paying attention to everything that's going on in your life constantly.
Yeah,
all the subconscious stuff that's currently there.
Yeah,
not paying attention to that, and so it feels random. It's like why this is hitting me harder
yeah.
today or this time or
yeah,
yeah. But totally, but those variables, those things in your life, right? These happen, and maybe it is been. Maybe it's been 15 years since the event,
mm-hmm.
but this year you got married.
Mm-hmm.
This year you had a child. This year you had a big life event.
Mm-hmm.
That could totally bring things back.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like my best friend, she, on the day that my mom passed away, like every year, she always checks in on me. She always remembers to check in on me, which I love her so much for that. But like sometimes I'll be like, no, I'm good. Like, it's cool. Like, it's a crappy day, but like, whatever. And other times I send her this like long message like, no, I'm not okay. Like, I've been crying all day.
Yeah,
and like, just having that consistent like check in to like see where I'm at is
yeah.
like, you kind of see the progression of like, some days it's not great. Some days it's like we're okay.
mm-hmm.
It was just a little wave today.
Yeah, it's a little one. A
yeah.
little tiny splash. Or
yeah. Yeah. It was just a splash.
Yeah.
Just covered my feet.
That's it. Yeah.
But you guys also said how, like, losing a parent leaves gaps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that just, to me, makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a logical conclusion that as somebody who still has both parents, like, I'm not consciously aware in my own life, but I could see how, like, or at least I've been made aware
yeah.
of it, you know,
totally.
Like Farrell has told me before, he's like, wow, how did you learn how to fix that thing? And it was just like, oh, my dad showed me. Mm. And he's like, oh, well, I didn't have that. And it's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I can't make him feel bad, or I shouldn't make him feel bad because he didn't learn how to do something that, like, I was able to learn. I mean, it's I've seen posts in, you know, the States where there's teachers that put together boys' programs where they teach young boys practical skills, like how to dress, how to, like, put on, like, how to tie a tie, and it's specifically for kids who don't have a dad to teach them that.
Yeah, perhaps even, like, a healthy sense of masculinity.
Yeah. Like, just mentorship.
Exactly, because this role model, this somebody to look up to. Yeah, what does it mean to be a man, right? Not having that whatsoever. And then growing up with, you know, I grew up with my sister and my mother. And that put me in a more, surrounded by more femininity, right? By more women, I guess, the girl and woman. And so would then make me to seem, I guess, like a more feminine person. Because I'm...
Well, more in touch with your feminine side at the least, right?
Sure,
like,
totally.
You're just naturally going to be there, right?
Right, but then, like, you know, having people be like, why aren't you a man so masculine? You know, like, why...
Why is that important?
Why don't you, right? Why is that important? What
does that mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
No, like, just shoot that back at them. Be like, what do you mean by that?
Right.
Because they probably couldn't even formulate it into words.
Right.
Because they're men.
Yeah, you don't know how to... you don't know how to fix things. You don't know how to cars. You don't, like, all this man stuff. Ooh, sports. I love when the ball touches the thing.
Yeah.
Wow, crazy.
It's okay. So I grew up with a dad who was into sports, and I still don't get that. So I grew up nerdy.
Right. Yeah, totally. But yeah, certain things that a dad would show you, whatever those things are, you know, you don't get. And I didn't get. And I imagine, yeah, for Ness.
That's so funny because mine's the opposite. Like, when my mom passed away, I grew up with two brothers and a dad.
Yeah.
Two older brothers and a dad. Like, my brothers were, like, living their own lives. And I was like, how do you do stuff? And my dad was, like, trying, but, like... There's just some things that you kind of need your mom for.
Totally. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And I've heard that with people that have, like, lost a parent, like, not just you guys. Like, it's like, you need your parent for that. Or at the very least, you learn how to live without that.
Yeah.
Which is going to look different from people who have that. Like, I mean, there's differences even in families that have both parents.
Right.
But,
yeah.
like... You're gonna feel that if you had it and then you don't, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're gonna have to learn, you're gonna have to teach yourself, or have someone else teach you. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe it's just because I'm not a complete dick, but there have been things where I've just been like, hey, Farrell, like, I'm gonna show you how to do this, and I'm not gonna do it as like I'm better than you or I'm lording this over you, just as here, I'll help you do something that nobody showed you.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not that I even know everything, because I don't.
Exactly. No, and I think, though, that it doesn't necessarily always just leave gaps, but it can also add things that other people just don't have or make you a quality, perhaps. Right. For myself,
it makes you resourceful in a sense.
Yes, exactly.
Because you have to figure things out.
Yeah,
there's
right,
some things you just have to figure out on your own
exactly.
if you don't have that person.
Totally. And especially for myself, I mean, like, within my own family, like, my mother struggles with, a mental illness. And so a lot of responsibility got placed on me after my sister left.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of naturally went on to me. And so because of that, I now kind of have this role or this, it almost feels like, you know, this sense of like, you know, screw authority always, right? Of
right.
natural disposition is almost, I am the authority because in my family I was. Or
well, like
between my mom and...
If you're parenting a parent, I can't imagine...
Yeah, there's no
like
one... Who else?
Yeah, like, what are you going to do?
Right, I better know everything then. Right,
welcome to Finance 101.
Yeah, right? Yeah, and so I always have... And so I struggle to ask for help, I find,
that, you know, sure, and because I might be more resourceful because I was forced to be, I might be more resourceful, but then I expect myself to be, and I can't ask for anybody's help ever. Because that's just not how I work. But it should be. That's an area for myself that I think need to learn to grow in, because I can think like, this is awesome, look at me, I don't need anybody else besides me.
Yeah.
But that's not true. Yeah. Like, I'm doing a podcast with two other people.
Yeah.
Right? Like, clearly, this would not have gone as it did without other people.
Well, like, we talk about that quite a bit, like, how the three of us, like, complement each other well, because there's just, there are gaps. Like, any person, like, I'm not here sitting here saying, I have both my parents, look at how great I am, because there are things that I'm glaringly oblivious to that I don't know, or I don't naturally, like, doesn't naturally click in my brain that does for Ness or Farrell. And it's just like, we're able to work together and like have that where we help compliment each other, and not just like, oh, hey, nice hair today. Not that kind of compliment, but like where our abilities complement each other and we're stronger for it. Right,
yes,
and
absolutely.
That's on community.
Yeah, which episode was that?
The show Community.
Is that not what you meant?
No, it's not.
I thought you were making a pop culture reference.
No, I wasn't. I was talking about the like textbook dictionary definition of community. Like,
oh, like we
people
are.
We are a community.
Now I just want to watch Community.
Yeah, let's watch Community.
I like basketball.
Yeah, we're
but
trying
also
Aubin in
I
the
don't.
Morning. Trying Aubin in the morning, but the morning's spelled with a U.
Yes. Is it?
It is now.
On ours, it will be.
Yeah. Because death.
Yeah, like. Which is. Oh my gosh.
That filter over this podcast.
That statement is in such contrast to the next point,
oh God.
Which is that going through trauma creates sensitivity to others experiencing trauma. Okay, but here's the thing, is that it's healthy to laugh. I've heard, you know, you've heard of that in the military, in paramedics. Like, when you see the worst of humanity... Yeah. You, as a coping mechanism, learn to laugh. Like,
absolutely.
You develop a dark sense of humor or you die
lot
of cases.
Because these things, humor typically is used as a defense mechanism and is used to make things that are otherwise scary or bad or not scary. And perhaps bring a light to a situation that where there is none.
Yeah.
And it's not to be offensive to anybody else who is going through a thing, right? But sometimes it can just feel good to make a joke. To just feel positive, to allow, you know, if I make a joke about my dad... My dead dad, if I add that into a joke, that could actually make me feel good now.
About a bad situation.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I was picked on as a kid. I grew up getting bullied a lot. So, like, I mean, I definitely used humor as a defense mechanism. It's like, you know, you might pick on the funny kid, but if he makes you laugh, then you're less inclined to punch him in the face unless you're insulting that person, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Don't insult your bellies. I've been there and almost got choked out for it.
It's not good.
No, not good at all.
I don't like that.
But yeah, no, the point is actually that going through trauma creates sensitivity to others experiencing trauma.
Yeah.
Because if you've processed it, not if you're in Ness's situation where you're clinging to the side of the pool and getting pulled in by your cousin, but if you've actually learned how to swim, then you can help others learn how to swim, and you kind of are, I wouldn't say nostalgic, because I don't think anyone's nostalgic about trauma, but like, you're able to put yourself in a similar situation or be able to say, this is how I can relate to you. And we talked last episode about how it's important to actually recognize the differences in situations and not just assume that, like, oh, your dog dying is the same as somebody's losing a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that's not the same thing. Ever.
No.
I don't think.
No.
And I, you know, yeah.
Wait,
and
what?
But yeah, like, it,
my dad
it,
wasn't
it
a dog.
But he was so loyal.
Oh, God. But, like, it can create that sensitivity, or on the opposite side of that coin, can create narcissists.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yes. This wound, right? This it comes from the same source, except that I think that if you don't, right, if you try to stay with it, as we said earlier, if you try to maintain that environment, that low frequency, we said, right, environment, then you will naturally just push other people down,
mm-hmm.
or could just push other people down and try to make everything at your level. But if you work through those issues, then I think you can become more sensitive to it. If you actually care about it, then learn to step outside of your situation and realize, wait, there's a whole world out there. There are other people who are currently dealing with what I did,
mm-hmm.
and or things that I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah.
And so perhaps I should be more sensitive and just try to, I don't know, just not be a dick all the time.
Yeah.
Right? There's no need. Just, yeah. Hey, you're currently going through a terrible situation.
How can I help?
Right. Yeah. Maybe I don't have to be part of the terrible situation. Maybe I don't have to be another hard part of your day.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it would be easy for you if you were a shit person.
Well,
to be like, I don't think you are. I don't think you are. But to just be like, oh, your dad died? So did mine. Get over it. Grab a mop and like clean the floor. Like, we don't have time to deal with your issue, right? Like, you could
move
go
your
there.
Issues
totally.
Off
and,
the road.
And like, we will totally cover, like, I think in a future episode, we haven't, you know, talked about all of the things we're going to cover in the future. I mean, how could we?
No.
But like, one of the things we've talked about covering is narcissism,
mm-hmm.
because it's so prevalent
yeah.
in our society.
Yeah.
So we'll leave a lot for that. But
yeah.
an aspect of narcissism that I commented on is that narcissists will tend to see the flaws in themselves subconsciously at the very least,
yeah.
and then project it on others.
Mm-hmm.
So a good sign of somebody being a narcissist or somebody who's actually trying to process their trauma in a healthy way is, are they looking at what's wrong with them and what they need to work through, or are they looking at what's in other people that need to be worked through?
Right.
Like, there's a very big difference between saying, hey, I see what you're going through and I want to help you,
mm-hmm.
and hey, here's what you're going through and here's why you're a bad person for it, or here's how you can be better and I'm going to tell you what you need to do and what you need to fix for yourself. If you're hearing that when you're going through trauma, run away. Just please leave, especially if it's in a significant other who's like trying to like bring you down to their level instead of building you up, because
mm-hmm.
that's so toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And so detrimental to your healing process that you need to recognize that in somebody. And like, just even if you just say, hey, I'm taking a break from you for a week, and cut them out of your life and
mm-hmm.
see how much better you are and how much you're going to grow with the people that are actually building you up and pulling you up, pushing you up, moving you forward.
Versus just manipulating you for their own, their own gain.
That's really hard to identify, though, when you're in that state. Like,
oh, absolutely.
I've had firsthand experience with that.
Totally.
Like, with a friend that I'm no longer friends with. But now, looking at it, I'm like, dang, that was not help. They were not okay when they were trying to help me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I was like, oh, my gosh, they're helping me so much.
Yeah.
Like, they're so wise.
Yep.
And I looked up to them so much, and I just, like, gave so much value to what they were saying and what they were doing and how they were helping me. But after the fact, it was just like, manipulation,
mm-hmm.
just them trying to get me to where they were. Like, I've definitely dealt with that.
Yeah. Fun times.
And it is
around.
Very hard to identify when you're in it. Cause I was oblivious while I was in it, but now it's so clear.
It is. It's true. And another good identifier is they'll probably tell other people. Like, they usually won't keep it to themselves, because if they make somebody else look bad, then it makes them look better by comparison, right? Mm-hmm. So if you hear things through your friends that that person has said, yeah. then that's a good sign that that person is trying to manipulate you into yeah. being pushed down yeah. and build themselves up.
Exactly. Because a truly really strong person, I think, brings people up along with them.
Yeah, the friend right. that's inviting you to the gym.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, to help you actually, I don't know, spot for you. I'm not an athletic person.
Yeah, I'm not either.
You know, I don't know. But that's
like,
a
I mean,
term.
You know those people that are like, yeah. here's a gym membership trial, or like, you know, yeah. why don't you come to the gym with me?
Yeah.
Not the person who's like, this is my gym, these are my pictures, and like, screw you, I don't want you at my gym. Like,
yeah.
you show up and they're like, what are you doing at my gym? Like, I mean,
totally.
To be fair, I've never experienced this because I've only ever been to a gym once on a trial offer, and I didn't even go back to work out. It was just to get the trial offer. I felt bad because I never used it.
Yeah, that's fair.
But there, I think, are two kinds of people in this world, right? I mean, obviously there's more. But
just two.
Well,
that's
only
it confirmed.
Two, that's it. But like,
what I'm realizing... Oh, sorry.
I think there's two kinds of people. There's victims and victors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are... people that are going to grow from their trauma, be stronger for it, and be able to help other people through it, and other people that are just going to dwell there and make it their reality. And it's like they're going to allow what colors their life to define their life.
Yes.
And that's a distinction.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I'm not denying that it's going to color your life. It's going to affect you. It's mm-hmm. going to come back. There's going to be hard days.
Mm-hmm.
But pushing through it, growing through it, and actually hitting genuine acceptance doesn't mean you don't go through depression again or bargaining
mm-hmm.
or denial or anger. Like mm-hmm. like we said, you go back through those gates possibly for the rest of your life. But there is a distinction between the person who lets it color their life and define their life.
Because mm-hmm. in the moment, it will color your life.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to always, right? But I think naturally it will always. Unless you put in that work to,
but I mean, I feel like it could still, like it's
yeah.
still, like I mean,
it'll come back and it
yeah.
can come back.
Yeah.
Shades.
Maybe it's a lighter shade.
Totally. Yeah, it might be a lighter shade. Exactly, but
more of an aquamarine than a
totally. But
indigo,
or just understand, even understand that, that is the lens that's over your life currently. That the lens is not the normal base reality.
Yeah,
or it's not actually what's happening. That thing is not actually red.
Yeah.
It's whatever color it is.
Yeah.
Right? The grass is still green.
Champagne pink.
Champagne pink? That's it. Yeah.
It's faded to champagne pink after healing from it.
There you go.
Were you going to say something, Ness?
I was just going to say another point about the friendship thing where afterwards I realized that in that friendship, I was being very vulnerable because she was helping me through things, but they weren't being very vulnerable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Like outside of it, I realized it. But yeah, like they would tell me things that I thought like, oh, they're being vulnerable and like whatever. But afterwards, I was like, no, that was actually very like shallow and very like surface level compared to what I
yes.
was sharing
they
and what I
reciprocating
like
the same level of
yeah.
vulnerability. Yeah.
Because
totally.
Even though they're at a different stage of you, they're still going through crap and they can still be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's what I noticed.
People are complex, messy creatures.
Yes.
And I think like it's easy to break things down into this is a good person and this is a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's millions of shades of gray in this world that we don't actually fully grasp or comprehend at any given point. But there are things you can call people out on. And just because that person doesn't know how to swim doesn't mean you're expected to actually like swim with
them.
Hey,
don't jump on me when I don't know how to swim.
Or even if you know how to swim, doesn't mean that you're going to be able to help them,
don't
right? Like back to the lifeguard analogy of like sometimes you have to let them flail it out on their own,
yeah.
and then help them, or maybe just let somebody else. Maybe it's not your job.
Yeah,
not always. No. I think that we should be trying to help people as we can.
Yeah.
In whatever way we can.
Yeah.
That's another thing is that like sure they you might be able to help them, but how?
Yeah. Right. Oh, I have such a hero complex when it comes to people. Like, yeah. Because it's like I can see things. Like, I have so many gut feelings about people where right. I'm like, okay, this is what you're saying, but this is what I'm hearing. And they're like, how did you know that? And it's just like, gut feeling. Like, I just knew, right? Like,
get out of my mind, Kyle.
Intuition.
I'm very intuitive that way. Yeah. But, yeah, it's just like, I want to help people because there's lots that I understand about people that they don't always understand about themselves, and I'm not perfect and I don't always catch it. But there are lots of instances where I'm just like, yeah, this is what's really going on. And like, don't call me out like that. And that has just over my life made me want to help people and like cut through the crap and just like talk to them about their issues, which turns lots of people off because lots of people don't want to work through their issues. But it also makes I've put myself in bad situations where I've just been like trying to help to the detriment of my own like mental and emotional health. And I just hit a point where I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you out of my life at least for a little bit. And hopefully we can meet back here, you know, at 3 o'clock. On,
yeah.
But yeah, no, that's just that's a struggle I have.
Totally. Yeah. Just wanting to always wanting to help. Yeah. Just needing to. It's it can sometimes feel like a need. It's like I'm a bad person if I don't.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a dangerous way of thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Versus like, you know, it would be good if I would do what I can.
Right.
Right. Not I should never help anybody. Last time I helped somebody it didn't turn out well, so now I'm never gonna help anybody again.
Yeah.
Right, but also not. I'm going to help everybody always, absolutely, and I'm not even going to think about my own life, whatever. You can ruin my life, and I don't need to focus on me whatsoever at all. Self-care, what's that?
Stop calling me out like that, Farrell.
I'm calling everyone
We're all today. Getting called out today.
I'm called out.
I have definitely brought people home where I've been like, Mom, we're adopting this person. I've done it with Farrell. I've done it with Ness. I've done it with others where it's just like, I recognize that this person has that gap, back to that point, of like, that person has a gap in their life, and that they just, whether it's bad parents, no parents, whatever, or sometimes it's just like not feeling family support, where I'm just like, we're supporting this person now.
Yeah.
My parents are like, okay.
Not another one.
Well, I mean, they would never say that.
Yeah.
I don't think they actually think that. I think it's just a frustration with me because I'm like that kid that's like, Mom, I found a bird that hit the window.
Yeah, except it's me.
Except it's a
Your
person.
Your mom's like, oh.
So my mom's like, okay, well, we're going to do what we can.
We might lose it.
Don't hold out hope. Don't hold your breath on this one. Hate to tell you, but its neck is already snapped.
Kyle's like, it's okay, Birdie. You'll be fine.
Mr. Bird, you're okay. You'll make it through
another
day.
You'll fly one day.
Oh, man, the side tangents we go on.
That's great.
All of them.
But one thing that we did talk about when in regards to anger as a stage of grief is that it is... We're going to coin the phrase for potentially future podcasts here.
Ooh,
tripping hazards.
Wow.
Ooh.
Oh,
tripping hazards.
Hashtag tripping hazards.
Things that might trip you up or might trip you up if you fall into a certain category. And we have to be very careful how we word this. And please, nobody hear any intended offense because there is no intended offense when we say this. But traditionally, from a societal perspective, it has been less acceptable for women to express their anger, and therefore they may find it difficult to process their anger. Just if it's not allowed to be seen, then is it going to be properly felt or processed? That it's just an observation. Is like, I mean, Ness has a Taylor Swift quote.
Oh, heck
I know
yeah,
for
she
a
does.
Fact she does.
Coming in hot with the
always,
Taylor Swift quote,
Taylor
number
Swift.
Two.
Because, yeah, like, how can you, how can, if traditionally a woman is going to be dismissed for expressing emotion, specifically active negative emotions like anger, how are they able to process it?
Well, my Taylor Swift quote really helps to illustrate it. It's from Mad Woman on the Folklore. Nope, it's on the Evermore album.
Hey.
I hope I'm not wrong, or I'll lose my Swiftie card.
It's on an album.
Anyway.
Taylor Swift.
It goes, you poke that bear till her claws come out. Oh my gosh, I forgot it again. You poke that bear till her claws come out, and you find something to wrap your noose around. And like, yeah, so in society, normally, women are just not allowed to like be angry and just let out that emotion. Mm-hmm. And then when they're poked and when things happen and like the emotions come up and they let them out, people will find anything to just like wrap their noose around, mm-hmm. to like pull out from that. Like, oh, they're just a Karen. Oh, they're just like, it's their time of the month, or just like anything like that. They'll just pick an excuse and just won't let them let out those emotions, whether healthy or not.
Mm-hmm.
Just letting them out is just not accepted, which is not great.
It's just a tripping hazard to the healthy healing process, mm-hmm. right? Of it's just one more thing you have to mm-hmm. overcome in a situation that's already teeming with difficulty, with innumerable variables and
absolutely
everything.
Mm-hmm. And I find that very interesting that, you know, Ness has said that she kind of felt the anger part was more difficult or got stuck in it more. And for myself, being a man, because it's not just that, you know, all female-specific thing that they're not allowed to do something, but men in that same way are not allowed to really feel those sad boy depression emotions. Mm-hmm. And I've most certainly, I think, dealt more so with that. Had a very difficult time, and still do. Have difficulty with that, with depression.
Well, if you're told to like man up,
mm-hmm.
and like that's specifically to not being sad, or depressed.
Totally,
it's harder to process that because you don't feel safe in processing that.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, oh yeah, you know, oh, he threw a fucking wrench across the room. Like, it's, you know, that's what a man does. Like, you know, it's boys will be boys. That's in society. It's more acceptable for men to be angry than it is for them to be sad.
Exactly.
And that is a point that we do plan on covering in the depression
later,
talk.
Yeah, we'll expand on that later.
But it's just recognizing the differences between the two potential tripping hazards.
Yeah. Also, correction, so I don't lose my Swiftie card. Mad Woman is on Folklore, not Evermore. I knew that in my heart of hearts.
Like,
my brain just forgot.
You said Folklore first.
I did say Folklore first.
To Evermore.
Taylor Swift, please.
You're like, wait, hold on.
Don't
Self
kick
doubt.
Me out of the club.
Yes. Do not doubt yourself.
And like we've talked about how
my motto.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We've talked about how we're like continually growing, or hopefully continually growing. Like, I read somewhere where it's like, you ever look back on a old picture of yourself and you're just cringing because of how like how much you've changed, or like how did you ever think that was cool? And it's like, I heard that cringing is actually a good thing,
mm-hmm.
because it's recognizing the growth in your
life.
Like,
yeah.
If you're cringing from something today, maybe not, but like
yeah.
if you're cringing from something a couple like years ago, like that's good. That's showing that you've grown.
Yeah.
And like
yeah.
that just gets to another quote that we've kind of come up with, which is that the newest you is the truest you.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, it is.
Because the person you are now has information you didn't have an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you have changed from information entering into your brain.
Yeah. Right. And so you are not the same person that you were a long time ago. And because sometimes you might think that you, sometimes it can actually feel as if you are, at least for myself, it can feel as if I'm back in that place of that event.
Mm-hmm.
And that things are too difficult to get over, and it just triggers something. And but trying to come to realize, trying to be, I think it's important to try to do some kind of grounding practices, something to just become present, just to become more mindful and present, and knowing that, yeah, I am not that old person. Or in the case of anger, I am not that angry person.
but also at the same time understanding that that is not to evade blame.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. That that yes, you were. You those things did happen as a result of your actions at that point. The person who you once were did that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But just because you did that does not mean that you must now continue to be angry. You can be happy even though you were angry.
Right. But if you did cause hurt, that maybe you should apologize if you now have grown through that and recognize you weren't in a good place.
Yeah.
I think it's tricky to like toe that line of being apologetic and not like using the excuse. Like because I think people want to forgive. Generally, people do want to forgive. So it's easy to go, oh, it's because I was going through something. And like, please understand that. True. That is, all those things are true, but you still did them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So like, it is a difficult balance because I've heard a few times, maybe not personally, but like I've heard where it's like, oh, that person's just evading blame.
Absolutely.
Because they're saying like, oh, it's because of this thing. Or like the trauma was just an excuse.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no, but it is a factor.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can go from being a person who didn't apologize to one who did. Right? You can go and...
But how often is that thrown back in people's faces now? Like, right? Like
right, totally. Yeah. Where you can never...
Like, that's not an excuse. Exactly. That's not an apology.
Right. Where you can never make a mistake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No matter what your circumstances were, and you did something that you are no longer proud of, or maybe never were proud of, but you did it, you can't make up for it. You just,
you have to move forward.
You have to move forward. And you have to learn, and that's the thing, to learn to forgive yourself. Do all that you can. Again, apologize, whatever you could do to help make things right. But also just forgive yourself and know that, no, it's okay. I can move on with my life.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a point, Ness? I think I cut you off there.
I don't remember.
I actually heard a really good quote, and I definitely am going to misquote it. It was from a TV show, and it was something along the lines of, there are two kinds of mistakes in life, the kind that you can fix and the kind you have to live with. And if it's the first, then do what you can to fix it, or something like that, right? Yes. Where it's basically like, in reality, that like that's actually true. Like there are only two kinds of mistakes, the kind you can fix and the kind you can't.
Totally. Yeah. But then how do you live with the ones that you can't fix?
Exactly. Yeah. And recognizing which ones you can fix and which ones you can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And not beating yourself up over those that you can't fix. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. To not try to control things that are actually out of your control.
Absolutely.
Right? To just allow yourself to to let go of that.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Comes full circle.
Yes. And to acknowledge that, to try to acknowledge that whatever may be happening within your life, whatever things may arise, that you are not those things, I guess. And that you are stable in yourself, I don't know, your strength.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Standing on your own strength, kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So last week we had the groaning Spider-Man moment as sort of a tidbit pop culture takeaway. I think that might be what we call it. I don't know. We'll have to workshop it.
Pop culture tidbit takeaway?
Yeah, that's the name. The official name coined right here.
Love it.
Yeah. Man, Gus had to change it on me.
Pop culture.
But last week was the Spider-Man moment where what's a moment in your life where you realize that you have to do something on your own strength and you've worked through it and you've just had to accept that nobody can help you with that.
Mm-hmm.
Or at the very least that you have the strength within you to work through it, right?
Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's you that's going to
could be
get
emotional,
through it.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly.
So this week... we're talking about Venom.
Venom.
The Venom symbiote. which, if you've seen the Tom Hardy film.
I have not.
Where he's... What? Ness, we talked about this before the podcast and you didn't mention that?
I did not. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, anyways.
I'm a nine.
Venom's kind of moved out of villain territory and more into anti-hero territory with the Tom Hardy film.
Cool.
Which kind of makes this analogy possible. This analogy has been made possible by...
Venom's an anti-hero.
Sponsored by.
But Farrell earlier was saying how anger can be like a parasite. Mm-hmm. And how the symbiote is very similar to a parasite in lots of ways, although it's more of a symbiote than a parasite.
Yes.
But there are similarities. There are similarities there. And that by the end of the film, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movie that came out like almost like 5 or 6 years ago.
Pause now, watch the movie.
Yeah, come back.
Okay, bye guys.
But like... Eddie Brock, Tom Hardy's character, has to learn how to basically live with this symbiote now. It's just like he can't get rid of it. He has to live with it. What's he going to do? And how can he channel that into constructive practices? And I mean, he had to, you know, face the forces of evil in the film.
You
probably don't, but...
some days.
But what's your Venom moment?
Tuesdays.
What's something that could be seen as a hindrance to your life or a detriment to your life that you can actually channel into constructive energies? I made the joke, it's like, oh, so you're angry, why don't you start doing construction? Like, swing a hammer, you're building something at least, right? Like, it's a bit of a joke, but it's true, right?
Like, you punch a bag or something, you know? Just like, totally.
There are things you can do there.
There are.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us. Hope you guys have a good week.
Thank you for joining us for our personal therapy.
You can listen to this or any other future podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or Amazon Music, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts.
To stay connected and get updates on future podcasts, you can follow us on social media on Twitter at @opt_pod or Instagram at @opt.pod.
We can't wait to start connecting with you.